Welcome to Fair with Mr. Nice Guy. I am your host, MNG. And today, we are continuing the Black Father Inclusivity Series. This is episode 2. Now, I have my guest here today. I have Anya, the chocolate queen, as she was dubbed in episode 1. Go ahead, Anya, tell the people what's up.
Hello, people.
And then we have Jeff, you know, straight talk, no chaser. This is what we're going to call him, No Chaser Jeff. That's going to be his new name, Chaser Jeff. Yeah. I agree with that. So, you know, we're going to go ahead and get into it. I'm going to go ahead and play the audio. Now, the audio that we have today is from the Black Inclusivity, the Black Father Inclusivity Conference that I was at earlier this year. Okay, so I'm going to play the audio. It is a Q&A, and then we're going to go ahead and get into the discussion.
I'm going to throw over the first question to Andre. That being said, how do stereotypes and misconceptions about Black fathers hinder their ability to be seen as engaged and as an active parent?
When we talk about Black fathers, let's just yell it out. Get your voice in the room. What are some of the stereotypes that we see? Black fathers are?
Absent.
Black fathers are?
Lazy.
You said?
Lazy.
Black fathers are?
Not engaged.
Black fathers are
unemployed.
Black fathers are
uneducated.
Black fathers are derelict of their responsibilities, right? So all of these stereotypes, these social constructs, really invoke, if you go another level, another layer under that, is that Black men are to be what? Feared. And so these stereotypes are designed by the white majority in order to keep people from actually seeing the reality and the truth. Well, the census came out and found out that what? That Black fathers are actually what? Engaged. Black fathers are actually what?
Present.
Black fathers are. And so one of the things that...
All right. So that was from, a Q&A, and it's talking about the stereotypes that come along with Black fathers. You know, Black fathers not being present. Black fathers, what, in jail, abusive. You know, a lot of things in there that was not mentioned that you hear on the news and that you see every day on social media. So I want to pose a question, is what is the first thoughts that come to your mind after listening to that audio?
I do believe that that's how Black fathers are labeled. It goes back to what I said the first go around, imagery and what's portrayed in the social media, in the movies. I know a lot of the movies that our community that watch, like New Jack City and those, in a lot of movies that our Black community absolutely love and adore. But if you ever pay attention to those movies in particular, the men are lazy, the men are drug dealers, the men are highly aggressive, they don't they're not productive citizens. And even if there was a good man, he either lost his kids to the street or he got lost to the street. And then so also it's not a lot of movies that I see back then or when I was growing up that it actually had a happy ending or television show. Like, you guys remember, what's that? The Good Times?
Okay.
When JJ and all of them finally got the hood and the football player, but he...
I mean, they still look like they was in the hood.
No, they were on their way out.
Projects.
Projects. Right. They were on their way out, right?
A bigger and apartment,
a ticket.
That's all.
They had a ticket, and remember he broke his...
What season was that?
That
must have been the final season.
Almost.
It wasn't the final, but it was kind of close to it.
It was almost something. You remember the guy
football and then,
Thelma husband, man.
Okay.
Worked so hard and didn't want to be considered lazy. And just when he got that golden ticket, boom, back in it. But I'm just saying, that's what they tried to paint far as the Black man in the community and giving it that stereotype. That part of it.
Okay.
I'm going to say, I'm going to go to a song. This song is from Tim October. Rest in peace, Tim. I am the monster that you made me.
Okay.
That's what I'm going to go with. Because just because you're scared of me, just because you think I'm always agitated, just because you think I'm never there, that's because of all the shit that you done to Black men, period. That's why you're so scared of me. That's why you want to take me out of the household. Because with me being in the household, I'm dangerous. Now the black family is back. We're dangerous. So I think it's, like I said, I am the monster that y'all created.
Okay. So you're saying that we are the monster that they created. They created this image that we have.
Mm-hmm.
Now, so let's run with that. Okay, so they created this image, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we are all just this byproduct. Let's just go ahead and just call it what it is. We are this byproduct of slavery.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we are in the existence that we can't move or achieve without the recognition or the assistance of the white majority.
It's not even the recognition. We don't want recognition no more. We tired of that shit.
Are we?
Hell yeah, I don't want recognition from nobody. I don't need recognition. Give me what I am due for. What I'm due for is what I work for.
Okay.
I don't need no handout saying, here you go, you did a good job, boy. No, I don't need that shit.
But when we talk about fame and fortune,
mm-hmm.
Okay, they are literally, them and Jewish people are literally the gatekeeper.
Correct.
Of fame and fortune. So, but that's why I said, you know, recognition, because that, in order for us to be able to build, okay, we have to get some assistance, because we don't have generational wealth. So we have to get some assistance from the gatekeepers. If we try to go to the bank, like, think about it. How many black banks can you go to and be able to get a substantial small business loan?
Mm-hmm. I see what you're saying.
And open your business. Okay.
Right.
Cause again, yes, we are the monster that they created, and we are a byproduct of slavery.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to, and the reason why I say recognition is because we can't move or get to where we want to be, even create generational wealth, without those gatekeepers.
I agree with you, but I don't want recognition. What I want is you to slide the fuck over just a little bit so I can continue straight. Because I can't continue straight.
But you know
straight.
They can't let that happen.
That's what it is right there. Yeah. I can't continue straight with y'all in my way, and y'all not gonna let me slide by or scoop by, because if I scoop past you or get on the same level as you without your help, now you can't control me. Now, if you can't control me and I start putting money back into the communities, now they mad, nah. So they're not gonna let me do that.
Of course they're mad.
Well,
of
that's course. Why they create different systematic things.
Yes.
So once you find another way or community get together, they find other ways to put us back or try to put us back. And like you said, that though they are gatekeepers, there's always something underlying in the fine print and mm-hmm. the black and white paperwork and things that we didn't have resources to.
True.
Or have the knowledge of. Or presented to us, like these long-term care insurance. I work in an industry where everybody got a policy back in what they called it, the boomers.
Yeah.
They got it when it was hot. Do you think we had access to that? Did you think that they were going to tell us that? And a lot of information that we're finding out now, we're doing our research, and then we're actually the community, as far as Black general as a whole, like, where you went far as the seminar, right?
Okay.
Things like that are being hosted now to, you know, give the wealth, give the knowledge to our community. But then again, there may be something else in the underwriting, because the problem would be for them is they know we're all not like that. Actually, not only are we capable, but we master strength. We master education. Mm-hmm. I mean, we know who was the first black doctor, who did the heart, our stem cells.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So Yeah, we, like Jeff said, the way he said it, though. Move the hell over.
Move the fuck over, man. I don't need nobody to say, oh, well, boy, you didn't got enough money right now, so you slow down. You slow down. Because now, at this point, they're using us for the fall guy. If we get too much money and we're doing something positive, they got to slow us down some type of way. They got to get us hurt. They got to get one of our family members to be on drugs and be like, oh, well, are you supplying his drug? How am I supplying his drug? Have he had it before I was born? Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So what? That's why I don't understand why people look for recognition anymore. I'm tired of looking for recognition. Fucking take it. I don't need recognition. Don't take recognition. I need to take what the fuck I need and what I want. If you're in my way, I have to go through you. Yes, it's going to hurt. Yes, they might even kill me. They might even, bro, I'm telling you,
Way to get to the top.
How else we gonna get there? Because we can't take each other. Because I got four grown men with me, okay?
Okay.
Let's say we go start this business. I got two of the guys building the business. And I got the other two is going to manage it. I'm walking through it. The two that built it, they try to cut corners. So now we got to tear it down again and rebuild it again. Just because they was trying to cut corners to save them some money. Not everybody trying to save them some money. The two that's running it, they hiring females so they can sleep with them because they ain't getting none at home. This is what we do, bro. I'm not lying. This is what we do. Or they got they mind on.
IL, they're cracking up.
Because you know I'm telling the truth, man. Well, we gonna get this business off the floor, off the ground, and then I'm gonna try to take some of the business from them and bring it to my family to get more business. But we in this together. Why we can't all do this together?
I think what he's trying to say is that they have conditioned us to be against us than be for each other, and understand that things do take time. But you said the higher.
I'm telling you, that's what goes on.
And you know what? You're absolutely right. You know, and I have a very relative story. So this is, as you know, this is not my first podcast.
Yeah.
Okay, this is like my second or third podcast that I actually have been on, but this is the only one that I've pretty much managed myself. So the first one that I was on, you know, everybody, you know, was of Black descent, and you know, it was going good for a great number of episodes.
Until
mm-hmm. you know, somebody had to lash out at another person. You couldn't bury the hatchet between those two people because both of them were stubborn, but they were in their own right. They were conditioned to, I'm right, you're wrong. I'm right, you're wrong. Mm-hmm. You should apologize. No, you should not apologize. And it's kind of like, okay, we all building something here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The goal was to build, grow, and, you know, possibly seek, you know, monetary value, fame, whatever the case is, whatever anybody was looking for.
Mm-hmm.
That couldn't happen. Because then, oh, well, we need to replace people. We want to grow. Well, why do you always got to replace people to grow? Like, if you think about it, you know, most artist groups have all the original members mm-hmm. until they get to like a high peak and somebody fall on drugs. Somebody
get the big head or drugs.
Or somebody fall on hard times and then they replace like one member. Mm-hmm. The whole band don't get replaced.
Mm-hmm.
They replace like the lead singer or the drummer. It's been a few that have been like that.
Now, let me ask you this. Now, let's say it was a podcast with... Now, I hate making stuff racial, but it just is. I'm sorry. Let's say you had a podcast with three black people and two white people.
Okay.
Now, let's say that black person and that white person got into it.
Okay.
That white person is going to be like, you know what? To resolve everything, man, I apologize. You know that? I was wrong.
Not necessarily.
And 9 times out of 10,
he might,
but if you got two strong black men, neither one of them is going to want to apologize. Because that's going to look at him like, oh, well, he's the weak one because he apologized.
That's true.
That's not what it is. True.
Speaking from men's perspective, so yeah. I don't know.
if me and him get into it, and I feel I'm right, and he feel he's right, we're going to go to the length of basically getting in each other's face, bumping chests, bumping heads. Because he's not going to back down because he wants to be right.
I got to ask the question. This scenario, does a check, a paycheck is attached to it?
It don't have to be.
I'm just asking because...
Grown men fight over basketball games.
Well, what I'm saying, because if there's a paycheck and you have a family, and if you are versing your manhood... And if you can think, but that's self-growth. I'm just asking.
But here's the thing. Regardless of, and I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
Paycheck and everything. But regardless of paycheck, I think the bottom line comes down to, not even the bottom line. I think one of the things is, hey, we have a vision here.
Yep.
And we're trying to explore and chase the vision.
Correct.
The problem is that when it's only one person's vision, it's like working for a company.
Mm-hmm.
I don't align with your mission statement.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
But for the moment that I'm here, I'm going to rock with y'all until I find something else.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
Once y'all piss me off, oh.
Yeah.
We about to count down the days until I leave.
Work starts slacking.
Everything.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what it contributes to, like, having that group of people working together. Just if we just take your scenario, you're running it. You're doing a walkthrough and everything. Okay. You got two people cutting corners because they don't believe in the vision.
Mm-hmm.
You got two people saying, you know what? I'm going to abuse my authority and I'm going to try to have sex with these girls that we hire. Okay. They don't believe in the vision. They don't see the long term on the profitability that it can be. And unfortunately, that's just how it happens amongst the culture.
And I do agree.
And I'll throw another stereotype out there. And this goes for, and I know we had talked to me and Jeff, we hadn't talked about this in the group chat, but I have, and it's not against all of them, I just haven't came across a good one. I have my issues with black businesses. I have my issues with black businesses. This is not to play nobody's business down. I've come across some great businesswomen, businessmen on their own business that do great work.
Mm-hmm.
The problem that I come into is when I go into black establishments and I don't get the professionalism that I get with the white counterparts, with the Asian counterparts, with the whomever counterparts. I don't get that same, I want to come back to the, you know, and I like to support black business.
I agree with you 100%.
So there's a flower shop. I went and bought some flowers for this girl, okay? And the flower arrangements were beautiful. Do I feel like they were overpriced? I do. Maybe I'm only saying that because it's black people. But I probably would say the same thing if I was getting it from Edible Arrangements. Mm-hmm. I don't want to pay $300 for this. What do I look like paying $300 for this?
I agree.
Nah. I went in there. They were just setting up, but they wanted to catch that holiday rush. Now, when I went in there, was there any level of... It was no organization. It was no professionalism. I mean, I literally just kind of just stood there and was like... Are we taking numbers? Like, you just standing there, you like, and it's one of those situations where if you're not assertive, you're not going to get the service that you're looking for.
I agree. Yep. It just happened to me tonight, so I totally agree with that. I don't know. I was like, every time I go somewhere, I always say, dang, do I look like I want problems? I want the smoke, or I don't. Is I'm looking like, let me speak to your manager when I first get in there kind of deal, because I do get that. It's a lot more young generation. Well, I won't say young generation because some of my age, but I do get that. And I don't even know what to contribute to because some of them come from decent households sometimes. And it's just,
It's the lack of education.
They wasn't prepared to do real business.
A lot of people aren't. So a lot of people want to be business owners, but they don't want to be business leaders.
You know what I hate, bro?
That's a big difference.
You know what I hate? When I go into a black business, they greet me and say, "What up, bro? What you need?"
I don't like that.
Oh, my goodness.
I don't like that.
I've never met you, sir. Hi, how you doing? I'm trying to buy something from you. I'm trying to give you not just one time, but if I come in here and I get greeted like I'm walking in my brother's house and I ain't never met you a day in my life, that's not how you do business.
Well, you know what? I don't necessarily have an issue with that.
I do.
And I'm going to tell you why. Because when I worked down at the courthouse and I had white attorneys walk up to me, "Hey, sir, how you doing today? You doing all right? Whatever. Go about their business." I see a brother come up. "Hey, yo, bro, what's good with you? How can I help you?"
But why?
Because.
Trying to relate.
If that's not who you are.
It's the different hats that we wear. Because, and I'm gonna tell you why I did that. I had one black gentleman come up to me, and I said, "Hey, how you doing today? How can I help you?" What you mean? How can I help you? what do you need? Like, he didn't understand. Even though it was professionalism, he didn't understand it. I get better responses. When I was we talking about criminals here, not trying to be discriminatory or anything, but if I came across a professional black man or an attorney, you know, that happened to be black because he'd be in a suit and everything, "Hey, sir, how you doing today? How can I help you?" General response, "I'm doing all right. I'm looking for this case. I'm looking for this courtroom." Okay, cool, fine, take care of it. But when it came to the defendants that came down, it was more so, "Yo, what up, though? Like, how can I help you?" And they was like, "Man, bro, I'm doing good. Look, I'm going to need your help, though. Like, look, I got this case. Yeah. I don't know where I'm going." You know, and then they already in a frantic. So trying to be
relatable.
Trying to be relatable to them.
Nice concept. Right. Someone, I get it.
Because my manager was like, "Well, why did you do that?" I'm looking like some. Because it made it.
Some
it,
such a, yeah.
It makes them feel like at least somebody on my side in this joint.
Well, I have instance where I had to condition myself to not. I typically talk to everybody the same. And I feel like even at my job now, a lot of them are very surprised of my professionalism. And it's because of the position I do hold. Mm-hmm. You know, I've been in situations where I may speak highly of someone who's of our descent, right?
Right.
And a white person may think that we hang out outside of work. So when they do some criminal activity or go down, it's what you guys were best friends, weren't you? And I'm like, who told you that? Just because I like that person, I thought they did a good job. Yep. You know what I'm saying? So sometimes doing and saying those things, and depending on where you at, you have to keep the same hat.
Yeah.
But understand there is, my relatability come when I have to have conversations with people just out of pure love. And I tell them, if it's off the record, I'm telling you as someone who cares. And people don't realize too, by us working in the professional environments and where we at in our career or anything, we hear a lot of things that they won't say to the general public. Right. It's like, if I'm telling you something, it's because I didn't heard it several times. Like, I even tell people, I go as far as telling anybody, young man, black woman, black man, you know, when Judge Mathis called it dry begging, and he meant where it's, "Oh, I sure wish I can make extra money to get that Cadillac you're driving." Keep that to yourself. Because you will have the mentality you can. I mean, a lot of things. I've been in situations where I have to tell people when they say, "You don't know how it is." And I said, "Yes, I do. I wash clothes on my hand. I walk miles to work. I had things prepared. You don't know my story. I'm not going to tell you that." But you tell a white person that. Mm-hmm. There we go. There's another situation. The father wasn't in the home.
Yeah.
When you made those choices, you made, you know. So it's like certain things, I do have the same conversation. And I feel like once they get to know me, then that's where the relatability come from. But it's really out of love. I mean, and I always say when I'm in, I work predominantly in a clearly a white environment, and I never allow them to talk about something they have no idea, know nothing about. Mm-hmm. You don't live it firsthand. Nope. You know, when I hear a white girl talking about she don't go, I work with them. When they say they don't go to the store after 5 o'clock because they get sex trafficking and what? And I sometimes would laugh, but you know what? I'm like, that's not at all how I know people. I know you personally. I know you personally. I have personal experience with great black men. The man I'm dating, I would not allow people to say things that they know nothing about. Who told you that?
You know, the crazy thing is that I've heard these stories from white people, because I feel like primarily what they get the information from is the news.
Yeah.
And that just gauges everything for them. Mm-hmm. But a friend of mine's, ex-friend, used to be friends, whatever, was dating a white girl from up near Lansing or whatever, mm-hmm. right? Funny thing is they got married, okay? And he had to move up there near her and had to drive an hour of work while she drove 30 minutes to work. But that wasn't the crazy part. The crazy part is that she used to make statements saying that she didn't like coming to Detroit because of all the stuff that she had read about or heard about on the news about Detroit. So she would go to downtown Detroit, hang out down there and everything, and then shoot back up to where she came from, but never wanted to visit the surrounding areas. So when she did visit the surrounding areas, even though you can make more money in Detroit, mm-hmm. say she made $3, $4, $5 more for doing the same job she was doing where she at. She said she didn't want to come to Detroit to make the extra money because of how dangerous Detroit was. But you marry a man from those same neighborhoods.
And the same people go to Mexico, mm-hmm. get drunk, stupid, plaster, wind up. Come on now. Like,
I'm telling you.
Well, I believe you because, I mean, okay, so when I went to college and I'm telling you, we not surprised. But when I hear people in my work environment say, oh my gosh, she might smoke weed, and I'm like, I know your kind. I know what y'all did the first couple of years in college. And I used to say, you're going to be an attorney? A lot of the attorneys I know, before they made these laws about driving while you're drunk and mothers against drunk driving, half of them had or would have had records because they either are dope heads or drunks and still nice. Drunks and operate in the court system, systematically putting people away. Mm-hmm. So it's just, this is where we go back to how they put us in, and they put us in a box and stereotype us because they can. And I'm not always, I pick and choose my battles, but when I'm quiet, they typically ask me why. I say because, and I'm actually in the age that I am now where I stand in my truth. You know absolutely nothing. I have a wonderful brother. He's a taxpaying citizen. He works for the government in Philly. He got houses. He didn't iced his wife out, brought her business. You know, but I don't tell them that because it's not none of their business.
Right.
But when it's time to correct them, I do not allow them to talk nonsense. But again, like you said, it's what they hear, what they read. It's like, well, I can't use that stereotype because we think they all killers. Serial killers.
Well, they are conquerors. You know, let's be honest. So let me ask you this. So just thinking about stereotypes. Mm-hmm. Why are these stereotypes dangerous? Because the big thing here is that the more you stereotype somebody, the more it becomes real, the more you believe what it is, okay? So if you look at immigrants, you know, Trump tried to build a wall to stop all these immigrants coming in because there were a number of drug dealers and killers that they were letting across the border. Mm-hmm. But yet these very people are the same people that are doing
everything.
And they're more family. They all. I ain't never seen a family group of people that live in a house with all their families and live on top of each other and love them, make sure everybody eat and safe.
Now let's just look. Let's look at the last 23 years, right? Okay. What all immigrants have the government attacked and stereotyped? Okay. Arabics for 9/11. That went on for years. Mm-hmm. You know, that went on for years. And going to airports being an Arabic was a traumatic experience because everybody looking at you like, is they carrying a bomb?
But you know what? I didn't feel sorry for them. Want to know why?
I'm not saying you have to.
No, I'm not saying you have to. But you want to know why I didn't feel sorry for them? Because we've been looked like that since we've been born.
True.
We've been looked at as criminals since we was able to walk because our father might have fucked up somewhere in his life. We've been looked at as, oh, that kid ain't got a father in his life. My daddy's sitting right here. Oh no, that's a criminal. Well, he's a criminal to you, but shit, he bought me some ramen noodles. Well, he stole some ramen noodles for me to eat that night because we was hungry as hell. Mm-hmm. So I understand, you know, all the stereotypes, oh, the 9/11, he's a bomber, he got something up under there, or the Jews, they tight as hell with money, but they spending money in their own community. It's filtering through their community.
Yeah.
So I'ma say this.
Okay.
Everybody needs their father in their life.
Right.
The white folks have a hell of a head start with their fathers.
And finances. And education.
Exactly.
Generational.
Period. They have a hell of a head start. Period. So, with us, we barely getting a run because our father, if he's there, he's not educated enough to help us with our homework.
Nope.
If he is educated enough to help us with our homework, he don't have a job.
Yeah.
If he got a job and helping around the household, not a man ain't shit because he always at home. But he got a job. So how can we win if, for one, stereotype kill? I'm going to tell you why that. Because fear kills.
Yeah.
If that white woman see my father and he grabbed me, I know I'm wrong, but he grabbed me and she hollered, oh, what is he doing? I told you he's about to beat his kid. And the police show up, not what they doing. They drawing guns.
Yeah.
Just because she read in the paper, oh, all black fathers beat their kids.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I have an example. So I used to hang out in Warren a lot in my teen years, and our group was very diverse, white, you name it, and Warren, everybody, we was together. One of the things I realized was a lot of time these white kids, shout out to Warren because y'all know probably who y'all are, when I tell you the things and the stuff they did and continuously got a slap on the hand, or I mean, these kids would have DUIs and open, I mean, drunks, and half of them not alive. Actually, I know a few in the last 10 years that's not living because those demons and the alcoholism and all them problems turned, you know, when you get in the dark, you just can't kick it if you start early. Mm-hmm. But I will never forget this one time. We was in a situation where the guy we were friends with, I don't know if he was high and drunk, either or both, big guy, white big guy, and just knocking mailboxes down. He, you know, white people do, hit the head and just acted real bizarre, crazy. And one of the things that he did in this crazy antics was hit my windshield and busted. But by this point, someone had called the police, and I said, you know what, as a black woman, the darkest one out of the group too, might I add. Every time, every single time they come, they say, what's your ID? I said, I don't even live here. I'm not, you know, I will always say, like, I'm not even, like, whatever. And then, so one time, I was in my car, and they saw this windshield, and he's like, this cop's literally said, who the fuck did this to you? Who the fuck? You better take me. I'm locking your ass up now. I said, well, shit. You know, you locked me up. Let me take you who did it. They see this guy, 6'4", big white man. I mean, we was teenagers, like probably 19. Saw him, saw me, and was like, what you planning on doing? What you want us to do? Lock him up? He said he was going to pay for your windshield. Excuse me? Didn't you just threaten me and told me to take you to the motherfucker who bust my foot? You take my motherfucking ass to jail. But soon as they saw it was a white guy who did it.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
They thought it was your black baby daddy.
Exactly.
That's what they thought it was.
And that was one of my... I mean, these stories would come. And I had one officer who saw me often. I can't remember his name. He knew me. I mean, my name is Unique. And he would say, you know what? It'll be a rookie cop with him, and he's like, no, she good. Don't even run her. She's good. And he said, why every time I turn around, you what knuckleheads and you this? And I said, why every time I turn around, you never arrest nobody?
Facts.
You know what I'm saying? Because it never was a brother. I mean, it was always white kids who was always doing the crazy stuff, busting windows, and you know what teenagers do.
Yeah.
At some point, I did have to say, you know what? This friendship is not given.
It's not.
You guys keep giving me in the court, you know, might be in the court system, but.
And you know, stereotypes, they're dangerous on so many levels.
Mm-hmm.
And there are hundreds of thousands of stories that are out there about how bad just being stereotyped and the situation it can get you in when you didn't even do anything.
Standing.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a stereotype against me one time, you know, I was riding through Canton.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know.
You had a hat on?
I didn't have a hat on.
Okay.
Racist cop ended up pulling me over. And he wanted to search my car. Now, didn't smell like weed, didn't smell like anything. Only thing I had on me was my CPL and my gun. And I let him know, hey, I have a gun in the car. Per Michigan law, following all the rules, right? Had my seatbelt on. It was me and this girl and my son. Okay. Pull us over. Can I search your car? And I'm like, well, what did I do wrong? Well, it like you was swerving. Have you been drinking tonight? I'm like, well, the lane is already dark. Okay. It's like 12 o'clock at night. It's already dark.
Mm-hmm.
And then it went from one to open. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. So it was like, okay.
Which one I
want
to go to.
Yeah. Like, so I couldn't see the line. So by the time I seen the line, I swerved over.
Yeah.
All right. Nope. That wasn't good enough. All right. I'm going to need you to step out. Okay. Just got my gun. You know, when you open up a brand new toy,
mm-hmm.
you want to take it with you.
you
want to show it off a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you want to get the weight right. You know, where can I place it when I'm sitting? You know, I got my chair laying back. I'm feeling good. So they pulled me out the car. No, checked the trunk and everything. And I'm like, and this is before I even knew what my rights were.
Yeah.
That's the other thing. We don't know our rights. We just be oblivious to everything. Like, yeah, y'all can check the chunk. Yeah, y'all can check the... Like, I ain't got nothing. Until they find something or they plant something mm-hmm. just because they want to take you to jail.
Yeah.
Now, you know, this guy, he arrested me, put me in the back seat.
Mm. He didn't take you to jail, but he arrested you.
Well, he had me in handcuffs. Okay. I was saying, he arrested me. He had me in handcuffs.
No, he did arrest you.
Okay.
Yeah.
So he detained me, arrested me. And I'm sitting back there and he is counting all the bullets in the gun. He's popping every one out.
Wow.
While calling in the serial number. And I'm like, bro, I just got it. I don't even know if they even filed the paperwork to register it right now. Like, I just turned it in today.
Mm-hmm.
Calling in. I mean, demanding them over and over and over again to verify this gun because he wanted to take me to jail.
Yep.
He literally wanted to take me to jail. Already had me in the car. Why your gun fully loaded?
Mm-hmm.
Why is it not? Like, why does it matter
right.
whether I got one in the chamber or not? Like, I'm pretty sure yours is fully loaded. Yours is kind of ready to go.
Yeah. Right.
I'm like, but it came back and said it was registered. Oh, he was pissed.
And he probably knew everything about you. I have a couple of friends who are police officers, and I wanted to know specific things because every time they pull you out, I say, like, registration, car insurance, and stuff like that. They know all that when they're running your plates.
Oh, facts.
Yeah.
They knew all that. So, and I said, they asked you, or I don't know why they do this fishy interrogation. Like, it was one time, Brian and I think we all was at Snickers that one time. We was all coming from Snickers, and it was D. All of us were driving the same way. We was all like, yeah, you know, yelling at the car. Like, hey, you go home, you go home. And the cop pulled, saw us. You know, all of us tried to straighten up a little, like, oh, dang. One of us, D didn't know you couldn't make a left, so he kept straight. And they wound up pulling over D. You know, D good, right? So we all kept going. That same officer, and I was actually talking to Brian about it. He may have looked them in the eye a few times, but he never remembered the officer, and I did. And now I know the officer like clockwork, because when I'm in the car by myself, he don't take a second look at me. But when Brian was in that car, he tried to do U-turn so much that I said, Brian, did you just realize? One time he did finally caught up to us, and you know, you don't want to be too obvious, because if you don't make the light, we're gone. We just, try again next time, you know. But this time, he was actually in the right spot. I think he was waiting to catch us. And I told Brian, I said, watch you pull us over. He's like, how you know? I said, because you keep staring him in the eye, and he been trying to get you. He been trying to run your name for the longest, because when I by myself, I swear it got behind me, got on the side of me, saw he wasn't in the car.
I'm going to tell you a secret.
What?
Your boyfriend is just a criminal. I'm gonna tell you.
He got a clean record.
No clean record until they figure it out.
You ain't never heard this. And Brian will deny it up and down. And you can tell him I told you this story. Okay. I told his mama this story. Okay. We riding down Dexter. I forgot where we were going.
Said enough. You was on Dexter. I already know what happened.
So back then, I had this all black STS 96, and we just riding. Now, you know, back then it was a doughboy car. You know, them Cadillacs STS. Mm-hmm. That was a doughboy car. Mm-hmm. So I'm riding down Dexter. We riding, and police right next to us. You know, Brian had. I think he had like them buffs or whatever them Cartier glasses, big round stupid glasses on. and I'm driving. I'm like, bro, you got your license on you? He's like, man, I don't need no fucking license, man. And I'm like, B, bro. Stop doing this shit. I'm like, man, police right next to us, bro. You got your license. I don't need no fucking. This is what you're doing. Man, fuck the police, man. I'm like, I knew it, they asses disappeared from the side of me. And I'm like, and all I know is, whoop, whoop. I said, God damn it.
Yeah.
I said, bro, why you gotta be stupid? Man, they ain't gonna do shit. All right. Go ahead. We pull over. And I'm like, man, just be cool, bro. Your license registration? I'm like, get my license registration. All right. Ask Brian. Get your license? No, I left it at home. Step out the car, please. God damn it.
Right.
They asked me, like, will you, like, I'm like, man, I'm like, do you know? I'm like, man, it's my cousin. When his birthday? Nigga, I don't know.
Yeah, they'll do that. They'll set you mean? I had to have it to me. Like, what is this?
Just because he family don't mean I know his fucking birthday.
That's the craziest question in the world. So they got me handcuffed, and I'm leaning over the car. They got him handcuffed, and he on the ground. I swear, the old boy was crying like a mother. Like, man, I swear, man, I got my license. My name is such and such. My birthday is such and such.
I'm like,
bro. So then, I worked at the courthouse, so I had to start calling out contacts. Like, hey, do you know this? Uh-huh. So we can get out of this shit. Like, bro, we ain't did shit.
Yeah. All
right.
I'm like, man, you ain't got no weed on you. He's like, no, I'm clean. I'm like, man, you better hope. Wait, I ain't about to risk my job for your ass, and you be going to the clinker by yourself. Right. He was on the curb.
Man, dog.
They let us go. I was like, man, we're going back to the house to get your license. Yeah. Went back to the crib, got his license, and fuck, messed up part is, they end up going to a shootout. further down. Dex on live with, so they had to go to a shootout. Them niggas took my license and my fucking registration.
Oh, what?
Damn.
What?
License and registration.
Yeah.
But it goes to show you that being black and whatever you riding in, and you ain't got to be doing nothing.
No, you don't. I want to add to it, because now I think about it, why they didn't pull me over is because the car that we were driving or I was in was registered to me. And when they only saw me in the car, it wasn't an issue.
Uh-huh.
But when they saw him,
they wanted that black man. They wanted him.
And just like there's other situations where I've read stories where black people was driving expensive cars.
Yeah.
And will purposely get pulled over because of the expensive car they driving. And the officer would say, well, you don't look like you make enough money to drive this car. You don't look like you're supposed to be in this car. Then they will go and downgrade their car.
Just so they won't get pulled over.
That's true. That is true fuckery. I'm not, motherfucker, if I worked hard for this,
you want it.
I'm driving this bitch. I'll get tinted windows on this motherfucker, so you won't even know who's in this bitch.
But you know what?
But I'm not downsizing.
I definitely downsized, for real, I ain't gonna lie.
I ain't downsizing.
I had a white Charger, and I went and got my windows tinted. I know I was wrong, but I went and got my windows tinted limo tint. So I'm driving to work, man. This is when I worked 46 minutes from my house. Okay.
Oh, jeez.
46 minutes.
Yeah.
I drove from, I'm going to say Garden City to, I'm going to say Centerline. Most people don't know where Centerline is.
Oh, I know where Centerline is. Yeah.
Okay.
I know where that's at.
So you know how many, police I'm passing.
Dang. Oh, hell yeah.
This one day, I got pulled over 4 times on my way to work. I put it on social media and everything, like, bro, once again. And the third one, the lady asked me, she walked up to my car. I said, look, this is the third time I've been pulled over. I said, I already know what y'all looking at, my tent. I said, ain't shit I can do today. I said, what the fuck? So she leaned down, looked in. You got any drugs in here? The fuck? I'm on my way to work. Do you have any drugs in here? Nope. Walked back to her car. Came back. Yeah, you've been pulled over by such and such and such and such. Now I'm the third one. If you get pulled over again, you're going to jail. I'm like, for what? I said, for the tent? Yeah. I said, you can't take me to jail for a tent. I said, I can't do shit the same day y'all keep pulling me over. I'm on my way to work.
Yeah.
So she hops in her car. I pulls off. No less than a mile, get pulled over again. I said, look, bro. I said, I'm going to just start taking the motherfucker tent off myself. He was like, what you talking about? I pulled you over because you ain't use your turning signal when I pulled you over. I said, what? I said, did you just hear yourself, bro? I said, you pulled me over because I didn't use my turning signal when you pulled me over. I said, so what was the original stop for? Oh, I thought I seen you swerving. I said, man, just be a hundred with me. You pulled me over for my tent. I said, this is the same thing the other three people pulled me over for.
You are over the line.
He was like, all right, yeah, I did. But, you know, I seen after I pulled you up, everything popped up that such and such just let you go. I'm like, so I can't. So I can't do nothing until later on the day or tomorrow. He let me go. But if they could, they would pull every car over to make sure that black man is 100% right. Period.
I agree.
I ain't gonna disagree with you. Now, I do want to shout out. I want to shout out this one guy, this Wayne County Sheriff. I don't know his name. I don't know who he is. But I'm gonna shout my man out because he let me go when I was speeding on Hines Drive.
Man, now,
on Hines Drive too. He's a good one. Shout out to him.
He's a black dude.
Man, fuck that.
Oh man, he was black. He was black. Man. He was I'm glad dude. You was saying
fuck
no. Look, no, look, no, but black can't.
Look, I don't even care.
Fucked I'm in WA all day.
Listen,
fuck
my,
that.
Look, my man came up to the window. He was like, you know why I pulled you over? I was like, bro, I was doing about like 55.
Right.
Let's do this, bitch. I was doing 55. He was like, yeah, I clocked you at 61. I was like, man, I'm just trying to get to this meeting real quick, bro. I had to put my work badge out on my man's.
Yeah. Well,
shout out to my man.
Shout out to him. I will say this.
That NWA all day.
Indiana and Ohio, we know.
Oh, man. Indiana Ohio and Ohio, don't like,
they don't like.
They just don't like Michiganders.
No, I don't think so at all. But my friends and I was driving to Indiana. I think, no, we had made it to Indiana. And we got pulled over. But the cops was like miles down. And I couldn't believe they was coming to pull us over. And my friend said, oh, the place in my uncle's name, because at that time she was her first year in college and he had brought her the car or whatever. Well, I didn't think anything was wrong that the place was in her uncle's name and he was legit and everything or whatever,
right?
But I didn't realize until we got and made it to our friend house in Indiana, the reason why he pulled us over is because he was hoping there were some black men in the car, because it was nothing but college kids. There was about a good five of us in the car, and he pulled us over. And when he saw it was nothing but a bunch of teenage girls, like, well, what do we do? You know, we were freaking out because none of us had tickets or anything. And then he walked around the car. He looked and he hit the front of the headlight. He hit the headlight and said, oh, your headlight is out. It's a little dim. It was like, oh my God, what? And we was going to get out the car and take a look. I said, no need to. I'm going to give you a warning ticket. Fix it or get it fixed when you know, it's not a ticket. It's just a warning ticket to tell you to get it fixed and whatever.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, so we like, oh, he's nice. He's giving us a warning ticket. So we drove the rest of the remaining maybe an hour to the location. And then we get out. There is no headlight dim, busted, or anything. We were like, and that was another indication. I was like, we all was pretty pissed that he stopped us in our flow because we was jamming and we was on our way there. But it was, the fact is, wow, he really wanted to take a black man or find something
or kill.
And the fact that when he looked in, when you could tell they make eye contact you, when they say to you, like, they looking into the car and they already know, I don't want to mess with you guys. Like, this is the look he gave us. He looked at us and said, oh, like disappointment. It was like, but those collective experience made me want to protect the black men even more.
I agree. So let me ask you this, and this is in your last opinion, you know, based on everything that was said and, you know, the audio that was there and everything. In your last opinion, you know, tell me what you think about the statistics that was given. What do you think about the recording, the stereotypes? You know, how does it affect you going forward? You know, knowing that black people are out there being statistically targeted and propaganda being issued against them. Jeff?
What was the questions again? You throw them at me, I'm gonna answer them, bro. I got a bad memory, bro.
It was all one question.
Okay, damn. It's all one question. All right, here we go. Let's see. The stereotyping, it'll never stop. Reason being, we still got the news that still scatters us.
Okay.
When they see us, they see big, they see black, they see scary, they see intimidated or intimidation. They see too much negative when they look at us. So the stereotype will never stop. The recording. I understand everything that they said on there, but one thing they did leave out is black fathers have been called everything in the book.
Right.
But they can never say we don't stand all 10 toes down when it comes to our family.
Facts.
We've been lazy. I've known drug addicts. I've known drunks. But when it comes to their family, they stay 10 toes down and they'll stand in front of them and take whatever that's coming to their family. Mm-hmm. So can't take that from black people.
No.
Fathers. How does it affect me? Man, I'm a black man in America. It definitely affects me. It hits hard because I'm raising two boys And I don't want to see them go out there and see the same shit that I done seen or been through, because now what I've been through, I do not like the police. Not because what I seen on TV, not because I read something, what I've been through. I've been one of those guys just chilling, sitting on the car, and they take me, slam me to the concrete. What you doing over here? Shit, you seen what I was doing? You just pulled me off the car. I was sitting down. So it affects me personally because, like I said, I'm raising two boys. Okay. And they about to be men.
Okay.
We need to come together and check on each other mental as men, period. You can say that's soft, you can say, oh, that's weak, but if we don't check on each other, we running women away from us.
Yeah.
Our kids is not coming and talking to us. Who the fuck's supposed to check on us? You send the police do a welfare check and the guy end up dead. For what?
Right.
No, don't send no welfare check. Let us brothers check on us brothers and let it be done with. That's it.
Let me add to this too. Brothers holding each other accountable.
Most definitely.
Yes.
And I see that a lot now, but if you know there's a man in your family, and it's like the cliche of, you know, we always have this one uncle or whatever case may be. What I find when I said the last episode is that a lot of the 80s children grew up without fathers and mothers too.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm talking about, I have a slew of cousins who we all have, are not fathers, we're best friends or good friends. It was just really crazy. Like, we are a family is a family, right?
Right.
And, you know, when I spend time with my uncle who hadn't taken care of his child, who was my father's friend, it's where was the accountability? So just as much as we need to hold our women for not being better or allowing children and fathers to build relationships, but
oh, that's a whole nother talk.
I know. But men holding each other accountable, and just not even being fathers, because they could be good in one area and not good in the other,
right?
And supporting that, so
right. I agree with both of y'all, like, wholeheartedly, like 100%. I don't, honestly, based on the summaries that y'all already gave, I don't know where I can go. I don't know what I can say, but I'm gonna try. Damn it, if anything else, I'm gonna try. I'm gonna start with the propaganda. And the propaganda is dangerous because it's leading to genocide. And it's leading to, in that large scale, but it's not large scale because a lot of it is going like swept under the rug. You know, somebody get killed and you don't know nothing about it. You know, 10, 20 years ago, before the internet was actually like really big and prominent, especially with news articles, you didn't see or hear any of that stuff. You know, the only way you heard it, if you knew somebody that knew somebody that knew somebody that was close to the information. And then even then, you didn't get the whole story because in the newspaper, doctored up however they want to.
Yeah.
Now we have videos that's being doctored however they want to, and it's only giving you a certain image or a 60-second clip of what actually happened in a 30-minute event. So you only have enough to perceive from 60 seconds when it was really just 30 minutes long. Okay, so when we talk about the video and we talk about the recording actually provided a well-rounded summary of where America has gone wrong with stereotyping and pedestaling certain races. So you want to pedestal white people, but yet in the same token, you want to put down and stereotype all other minorities so you can continue to be the superior group.
Mm-hmm.
Not understanding that your superiority is on borrowed time, because it's only a matter of time before the minorities take over as the majority, and then you then become the minority, which they don't want to happen. And that's why this propaganda goes out there. That's why this genocide goes out there. Okay, that's why all these other agendas that are being pushed forward goes out there. So when we look at Black Father inclusivity, and being in a household and being that pillar and being that anchor for women as well, for black girls and black boys, and showing them like, hey, this is the way to conduct yourself. This is how Absolutely. You should be treated. This is what it means mm-hmm. to be a man. This is what it means to be catered to and taken care of. Mm-hmm. You know, let me set the standard for these young girls. Let me set the standard, or show the little boys the standard that you need to live by and go by. Without those things, there's nothing.
Yeah.
Because you see in the white families, when the standard is set, mm-hmm. what happens? You get one or two things. You either gonna get a spoiled brat, mm-hmm. or you're gonna get a successful kid. Mm-hmm. You're gonna get one of the two. In the black family, you don't have that. You can't get the spoiled brat. Because what is there to be spoiled about when you don't have the resources or the income to be spoiled? So the only thing you can get is a successful child. It's either, what they say, is either Las Vegas or bust. Mm-hmm. That's what you have. You can't go no further than what your environment allows you to go, but then you still are stifled by your own self-determination, your own knowledge. And that's what I try to tell my son day in and day out. The one thing they can't take away from you is knowledge. You can learn as much as you want, and it's gonna take you as far as you can go. Your ignorance would be the only thing that's gonna limit you. Without that ignorance, the sky's the ceiling. You can go anywhere and do anything you want as long as you got the knowledge. They respect knowledge. They don't want you to come in and take over.
Right.
But as long as they can use you for knowledge, mm-hmm. they will. Mm-hmm. I see Aya want to say something. She sat back and leaned back up. She was like, I'm about to do lean back with you.
Well, because what you said, it's a book. Have you guys read 48 Laws of Power?
Definitely. And 50.
So I haven't read 50 yet,
I got 50 in my trunk.
Okay. And we already know you can outsmart the master.
Yeah.
And what you bring me to my point where they can't take away your knowledge, but and what you said regarding when you take away certain things, the only thing you have is your self-determination.
Right.
When I say you just gave me an epiphany. That's exactly what I had growing up when I didn't have a father. It's because I knew that I only had a couple of choices. Mm-hmm. And in order to succeed and just be a productive woman or a productive human being and an adult in my life was that part of it. So
now I got two more book recommendations for you.
Okay.
Okay. To go along with 48 Laws of Power. Okay. The first one is The Art of War.
It's a great book.
Now, if you haven't read that book,
I started to read it years ago.
Let me tell you, if you get the one with the commentary, okay. It breaks it all down for you. That was the first book that I got on strategy of war, and it is very applicable to everyday life and how you navigate the workplace. The second recommendation I have for you is The Prince by Machiavelli. Very good book, very phenomenal. I read all three of those books and they all intertwine one way or another. So it's kind of like you kind of just rehashing the information from one book to the next, but in full circle, it is the primary weapon you will need when you conversing with other cultures, when you're versing other people,
yeah,
and you kind of see what the landscape is. And that's what it's all about, is looking at the landscape and seeing where you can win a battle and where you can lose a war. Mm. And that's two different things. And that's one thing that I liked about The Art of War, because you can lose a battle. You can lose a battle here, you can win one here, and you can lose one there. But at the end of the day, as long as you win the war, because you can lose battles all day long and still win the war. So when people say, you got to pick and choose your battles, you can pick and choose, but which one of those are you picking and choosing right. going to help you win that war?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's the bottom line.
Yeah.
Well, this is Fair with Mr. Nice Guy. I am your host, MNG. We have Jeff, No Chaser Jeff, sitting with us.
Yep.
Move out the way. No, I'm playing.
And we have the chocolate queen herself, Anya. If you want to go ahead and leave us a voice link, you can go ahead and leave that on Spotify. If you want to shoot us an email, you can shoot us an email at farewellmrniceguy@gmail.com. If you want to follow us on Instagram, farewellmng. We also just started a TikTok, so we're on TikTok too on farewellmng. So check us out. All right, I will see y'all in the next recording. Peace.
Peace.
Thanks for joining us on this unfiltered journey with Farewell Mr. Nice Guy. We hope today's conversation brought you fresh insights and a renewed embrace of authenticity. To keep the canon vibes flowing, hit the subscribe button for more thought-provoking episodes and share the podcast with your friends. As we wrap up, keep embracing your true self, navigating life's twists and making connections truly count. Until next time, remember that your journey to authenticity and growth is one to cherish.